Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports. Joining us now is Outkick360's Jonathan Hutton. Hutton, we heard from Vrabel and Rand Carthon at the NFL Combine yesterday. And Rand Carthon and Mike Vrabel each spoke about Ryan Tannehill. Rand Carthon said, you know, Ryan Tannehill is under contract. He is a Titan. He will be a Titan. How did you interpret what Rand Carthon said about Ryan Tannehill yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, nothing definitive, right? But at the same time, leaning towards, it sounds like they agree with what we've been saying here. It's the most, not easy move, but the one that makes the most sense based on where they are right now and the options that they have. Ryan Tannehill can be the starting quarterback, and I'll reiterate this again. That doesn't mean they won't draft at one where they are. There's a scenario where they could go young at quarterback and still have Tannehill under contract this season and let it play out that way. But nothing definitive, but I do like what they were saying about, hey, we're moving forward, he's under contract. Well, that's true. That there's optimism there if you're on the Tannehill bandwagon to stay. But he's on the Titans roster and he's under contract and he's the starter until when? Until he's not. And they can always point to a decision that comes up or an offer that was made. And this is the same organization that had Mike Vrabel stand there and say that A.J. Brown wouldn't be traded either this time last year.
And that's exactly what I have said is he's the quarterback until he's not. And I think the best case scenario for the Titans, if there's a quarterback in this draft that they love, you draft that guy, sit him for a year behind Tannehill, and then he's your starter for the future. But if, let's say you are Rand Carthon, you are Jonathan Hutton, GM of the Titans, and you do draft a quarterback in this year's draft, who is your guy and what's your path to getting there?
Well, it doesn't have to be a first round at number 11. But I do think there needs to be someone that they feel like they can develop, which has been a buzzword for D-Mace, that they can develop behind Tannehill if he remains under contract and they don't take the option of either trading or releasing him to save themselves $18 million on the cap. If they draft a quarterback at 11, to me, that's not conducive for keeping Tannehill under contract for whatever his number is this year. And I take that to mean they're moving on. But, is there a Hendon Hooker-type guy, and it could be Hendon, who they feel like can be a backup this year, develop, and then eventually compete to be the starter? Sure, I think that option's on the table. And you can trade back, gain picks. In a perfect world, you're in the bottom of the first round. You still get the fifth-year option on a quarterback. But they have so many different holes, especially on the offensive line. To me, the common sense plan should be to keep Tannehill under a new number contractually, which Carthon said he wasn't going to speak about. But I think that's a necessity. And figure out how to get that cap worked out to where you have enough blend of veteran acquisitions, which starts on March 15th, and rookies who are going to help you on the O-line, because that's critical no matter who's playing the QB position.
Now, Jonathan, we're discussing the quarterbacks, and we're discussing, Ryan Tannehill and whether the Titans are going to move up or not to try to get a potential quarterback in this year's draft, whether it be, moving up within the top three picks or moving up within the top five picks. But looking at this team, and Rand said it as well as Mike Vrabel, they got a lot of holes to fill. And more importantly, the offensive line. Carolyn brought up that, listen, they might have to replace all five starters from last year. Can you see a scenario where everybody's thinking this team either is going to stay at 11 or move up to try to get a quarterback or get an offensive lineman, and they just – sit back and move back and continue to move back to build up draft stock and to build this team, because whoever they get at 11, it's not going to be a quick fix. This is going to be a situation because of what has happened in prior years where it may take a few off seasons to build this team back up to Super Bowl contention.
Yeah, unless you're at 11 and you have your franchise, mm-hmm. and again, the keyword here is franchise, your franchise quarterback, mm-hmm. offensive tackle or pass rusher on the board, then you pull the trigger and take that player. Mace, this is very unpredictable in what Carthon will end up doing here. What we did learn about John Robinson from really day one is he's not scared to trade on draft day and trade picks. Trade number one overall and move around and try to gain draft capital. Carthon has helped build a roster in San Francisco through the draft to have one of the best rosters 1 through 53 in terms of depth. And I'm on board with what you're saying with to do that. You move back, you gain picks, and you have more quality players than just one elite player. But if you have that one elite player, this team is desperate for elite talent. And if they're there on the board at 11, according to their draft board, they can't trade out of there. That player is too valuable based on that rating. And to me, the three positions worth doing that for right now, offensive tackle, pass rush, or quarterback. Other than that, I'm buying into what you're selling, which is sell the pick, trade back, try to pick up extra draft capital for a team that's chasing a QB that you don't like.
Now, we had TD on yesterday, and I asked him the question about Austin Hooper and, you know, do you believe the Titans will bring him back? Because that's another void they're going to have to fill, because as good as I believe Chigakonkwo is, and he will only get better, they do need that veteran, and Swain needs to go. He can play for somebody else. He's good enough to play for somebody else, but I think him being here, it's worn out his welcome. But do you believe they tried to make an effort to sign Austin Hooper back?
That's a good question. In thinking through the depth at the position through the draft and through free agency, the player that was linked, I'll throw his name out there. Mm-hmm. The player in free agency that was linked to the Titans last year as one of about four teams, but he ended up getting the franchise tag, is Dalton Schultz out of Dallas. And they're not placing the tag on him this year. So he's going to be a free agent. And I wonder if the Titans get linked to him again. Austin Hooper, I mean, they jumped out and signed him pretty early on in free agency last year. And then he was just never a key factor week in, week out through the season. You know, he slid back into the shadows for the most part. Chigakonkwo needs to take over the number one role. That's me reading into what Tim Kelly said yesterday when he starts naming players. He names Treylon Burks and Chigakonkwo as guys they've got to be creative with and get the ball to. And I'm on board with that. But this is still an offense that's going to use two and three tight ends in a game. And depending on Hooper's number, maybe you bring it back and pair him with another Jeff Swain type that can do the dirty work for you in the trenches and still run this same style of offense. I think it can be a very similar-looking offense, but be better. I think they want to be multiple. They want to do all these, you know, catchphrases. That's great. But I've seen this offense run two and three tight the vast majority of the time and put up well more than 17.5 points per game like this team did a year ago. So I think that's the key part of it. And Hooper didn't show me that he's a part of that plan or that process. I think I would look elsewhere. And if I can't do anything else, I look back to Hooper.
Yeah, you know, I mean, everybody on right now knows how I felt about Austin Hooper throughout the season. But I will admit, and I've said this before, listen, if a guy proves me wrong, I have no problem with coming on there and saying, hey, listen, this guy's playing much better. And Austin Hooper played a lot better toward the end of the season. And with that said, where do you predict this team is at the end of next season? Are they considering everything that happens, and we know they can't fill all roster spots or all holes this year, where this roster is now, where do you think they land as far as record-wise or in seeding? Are they a playoff team moving forward at the end of the season next year?
I believe they have a playoff coach. Mm-hmm. They don't have a playoff roster right now. But so it's hard to say. They have to be creative. I know that's been the catchphrase for offense. They have to be creative with the cap this offseason. And, you know, the one thing that they felt like was that kept them hamstrung a year ago, they kept pointing to, or, you know, it was obvious, it was sticking out. Tannehill had a cap number that they couldn't get out of and wasn't going to be helpful for the cap. It would be detrimental to the cap if they moved him. That's not the case this year. And if they want to get creative with the cap, I think it comes down to Tannehill or Henry and how they handle both of those players. And if they extend them and they help themselves on the cap, they alleviate some of that and they gain some more money to go out and invest on the O-line. Because, again, I'm stressing, and I know you guys have been too, that is where it starts this offseason. That will determine where they are at the end of the year. That and their health, which they haven't been – I mean, they've been awful health-wise the last two seasons. But they need to address the O-line before we have any sense of trying to predict that, because right now they don't have an offensive line that's competing week in and week out. They're a non-factor in the AFC South with the O-line that they ended the season with.
Just truly brutal. Hutton will join us. Well, stick around with us coming up next. Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, in The Game Nashville app. Outkick 360's Jonathan Hutton is with us. And Willie, how to follow up to Hutton's last point.
Yeah, Hutton, you said something that I've been thinking about a lot. As the combine goes forward and you start to see what the options are to try to build what you called a playoff roster. And you said right now it's not a playoff roster. I would agree. There's just, and you heard Mike Vrabel saying it yesterday, he said we've got a lot of holes that we've got to fill. We need speed. There's a lot of things that need fixing. Now, if you're an optimist, you can say, look, if we get our healthy defense back together, you could still have a really good defense, and the offense wouldn't have to be spectacular. You still got Derrick Henry. You can make a run of it. But with the AFC as stacked as it is, I am curious what the ceiling is on this team. And if your ceiling is maybe you could get back to the playoffs and have a puncher's chance, how does that sit with Rand Carthon as opposed to maybe some other options that take a step back to take the two or three steps forward down the road to where you could really be a heavyweight?
It's a delicate balance. Because, look, the owner wants to win. I think we know that based on what she said publicly when she speaks. Vrabel, in no way, Willie, comes across as a guy who's taking the year and saying, you know what, this is our rebuild. Like, he is so focused on 2023. I don't think he cares about 2024, personally. I think he's so, like, laser-focused on the next season and how they win. Rand Carthon needs to be a blend of that and looking over the horizon for the next 2 or 3 years. It doesn't need to be the next 10. They need to, going back to what I was saying with Mace, if a guy is there that's a franchise elite talent that you cannot pass up on, you take him because that is a franchise second contract guy. They need more of those. They lack those guys. But point being, in this day and age where the league is and how much time you have to win or lose before you're out, I think it's imperative they hit on some draft picks to keep them competitive. And this team will be competitive, I think, if they have the O-line in place like they've had over the last couple of seasons instead of what we saw last year. I think they need to be able to create a great mix of veterans. And I think the veterans can be on the interior where it doesn't seem they're going to pay the big money for a Nate Davis who's going to be overpaid at guard. They can replace him with someone, but also, you know, at left guard, pair that with what could potentially be a rookie left tackle and move and press forward with that. They left the door open for Lawan. I don't know where Lawan stands on all this. The first thing, though, is his knee. He's got to get healthy and pass a physical. But even if you're on board with the idea that he's back under some deal on for a year or whatever it is, you have to have a plan of someone young at the left tackle position that is ready to go or is in front of Lawan by the time we get to week one. I mean, that's the way I would be thinking if I'm Carthon, instead of just load up, run it back, and here we go. This team can't run it back. But what they can do is get back to what they did well, which was their identity. They lost their identity midway through the season, which was smash-mouth football in the trenches where they were going to push the offensive – they were going to push the line of scrimmage forward. Instead, they were pushed back. And we saw the record to end the season. That, to me, that's the imperative question that they have to answer before we're able to say one way or the other where this roster is competitively in the AFC South. I don't think they'll bottom out, but right now they're nowhere close to the top either.
Well, and let me follow up with my perspective of what we're just watching here with the Predators over the last week. This is why it's tough when you're the coach, right, because you just described Vrabel perfectly. He's a battler. He doesn't want to say, well, it's okay if we lose for the next couple of years because it'll come back around. We'll be really good when we reset, because that's just not a coach's personality. But when he is part of the architect, like he's going to be collaborating with the new GM, he's got to say. Now let's contrast that with the Predators. John Hines is like Mike Vrabel. He's in the battle. He's there with Roman. We're out in Arizona. The team's there. They still believe they can make it, right? They think they can make the playoffs. It's going to happen. We got 25 games. If we just play our best 25 games, we can get in and anything can happen. That's the mentality of a coach. That's the mentality of a team. David Poile, the GM, came to the conclusion, look, I've seen enough. It's 55, 56 games. This is what we are. I don't think we're quite good enough. We're gonna pull the plug, and we're going to start playing for more of the future in the big picture. We're going to acquire future assets. So two different viewpoints. But my point is, if the coach is making those decisions, if John Hines was collaborating with David Poile, John Hines isn't signing up for that, right? That he wants to battle with the guys he's got. He just took three very important pieces off their team for this year, and they have to try to make it work. So I guess that's where I'm coming from are the Titans prepared? Is it good enough? Because we just heard a ton of Predator fans throughout the year saying, look, I'm tired of just getting into the playoffs and then not having the weapons to really have a great chance. And I'm wondering if the Titans are sort of getting to that point. But Mike Vrabel won't sign up for that. I think he will want to try to keep doubling down, give me everybody I can get back, and let's give it our best shot to try to scrap our way, which is kind of what they've done a lot of these years, where they've been 9-7.
Well, I you're right. But I listen to that, and I'm nodding with you here on the phone because I'm thinking the easy sales pitch is to trade up and get a franchise QB. And by doing that, you say, why did we do it? Look at the AFC. Look at the stack of quarterbacks in our conference, and look at who's in the playoffs. Like that to me, that's the sales pitch where everybody's like, yes, I'm on board with it. But it really starts for this team on the O-line. And I think, Willie, the blend of win now versus win moving forward, which I think they're a roster right now that's more in line with the line of thinking of what Carthon was brought here to do. They have to be able to be strong up front, because it doesn't matter who the quarterback is if they don't get the O-line fixed. And this is where the Reaper comes to grab the what's left of the O-line after you swing and miss on Isaiah Wilson and Dylan Raidens, right? Like these are things that happen when you see the complete overhaul up front. Again, you're right. I mean, I say are they a playoff roster? No. Can they be? Sure. I mean, they can be the 7th seed and win their way in at the end of the season. But are they competitive at the top half of the AFC? Absolutely not. And I think organizationally, I think they know where they are right now. The question is, how creative can they be with the salary cap, which they have to maneuver? And through the draft, this is not the year, if we're talking playoffs next year, this is not the year where your first and second round picks don't contribute. And I think the last year's draft class is coming together fine. The point being, they have to have impact players that are going to help them on game day instead of guys that they're slowly maneuvering in through special teams and a third, you know, the third option at a position. There's reason for optimism, though, Willie, through some of the talent that they have. Jeffrey Simmons, getting him done. We've seen Tannehill and Henry when it's working well. Working so well that they're winning and winning, stringing wins along through the season. But again, they've got to fix pass rush, and they've got to fix the offensive line for this team to excel to the point where Vrabel is going to be happy and Carthon is also building for the future.
Jonathan Hutton is with us, OK360. Hutton, do you think that the offense last season was predictable?
Kind of. I mean, it's very difficult to say it was predictable because in totality, Caroline, because they were so good in the first half. They were really good at scoring points then. it was very predictable that they weren't going to be well in the second half. What was predictable for me was Todd Downing is going to – his creative group of play calls, he was going to call those plays at the worst possible time. Like, that to me was predictable. The gimmick plays when you're, you know, rolling down the field, doing what you do, and then you roll in something else and you're just like, well, that was not the time to do it. That to me was a very predictable aspect of it. And I think the other area where Kelly has to be so much better than Downing, I don't think defensive coordinators on the opposite sideline or in the booth chased calls for Downing. So in that aspect, you could say they were more predictable than not. I think you had to chase calls against Arthur Smith, meaning the coordinator's already two snaps down the road before the defensive coordinator figures out that he's chasing. They were ahead of defensive coordinators in 2020. That was not the case last year. And I think they got very predictable, especially when the offensive line was decimated by injury, paired with Downing and the overall play call that he was doing. And look, they lacked the A.J. Brown guy. When you shut down Henry or you shut down one other area, the guy who's going to step up and make a play, you know, the moment guy, they lacked that in a major way. And that also hamstrung the play calling to some extent too. But there's no excuse for where they ended up versus the expectations that this team had. And that's where Kelly has to be far more creative and balanced than what we saw a year ago.
I'm so with you with the dumb Todd Downing calls. It was almost like a bingo card that I had for every single Titans game. And it was dumb play call from Todd Downing. And if that box wasn't checked, I knew that there was a Derrick Henry wildcat call coming or a jet sweep to Malik Willis with the game on the line. It was just so many times I thought, what are you doing? And why right now? Jonathan Hutton, OutKick 360. Appreciate you for joining us every week. We'll chat with you next week. Oh, and also before we go, Hutton, let us know about Blend Bar.
Yes, and thank you guys. Always enjoy it. And thanks to Blend Bar with Davidoff Cigars, located at 508 Church Street, downtown Nashville, right in the heart of Smashville. Voted best old-fashioned in Nashville. They received that honor and got the nod over 14 other bars and restaurants right here in Music City. Blend Bar has an exclusive relationship with Davidoff Cigars. They're the best cigars in the world, and that allows access to rare cigars that only Blend Bar can carry right here in Middle Tennessee. Blend Bar with Davidoff Cigars, the best ventilation system in the industry as well. That allows for your enjoyment for the cigar smokers or the non-cigar smokers alike, because your suit's not going to smell like a cigar. That means your significant other is not going to complain about that, and that's important. So come hang at Blend Bar with Davidoff Cigars. Great for pre-gaming prior to a Preds game or a concert at Bridgestone Arena. A great spot to watch the Preds games during the week when they're on the road. And it's a solid hangout spot before you go to the Ryman, before you go to Nissan Stadium. And check out Blend Bar on social media, at Blend Bar Nashville on Instagram. Or just swing by in person. I'll see you there. 508 Church Street, two blocks from Bridgestone Arena, and the Ryman. Blend Bar, luxury redefined.
Appreciate you, Hutton. We'll see you at Blend Bar soon. Coming up next, we'll get into one word that the Titans have reiterated so many times throughout the offseason. And I think yesterday we might have seen exactly what they mean by that. Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
So I lean on Mike a lot. Our offices are right next door to each other. And so I'm in there or he comes to my office. And again, this is his vision of the offense, defense, and special teams. I'm learning that, right? So the best person to learn that from is him. So I go to him, hey, man, am I seeing this correct? I think this guy can do these things. And about, all right, what are we looking for in this? So I met with the assistant coaches from each position group and had them put together a 15 to 20 play highlight tape of what they're looking for in every single position. And when they're talking about hand use or, you know, talking about specific moves, put examples on the tape so I can see. So I'm learning their language through that. And so, again, whether it's with Mike, whether it's with Shane, whether it's with Tim or Auk, like, we're spending time together so I can learn their language and see exactly what they're talking about when we're talking to players.
There you go. That was Rand Carthon yesterday. And there was one part of his press conference yesterday when he was at the podium. Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. When Rand Carthon was at the podium yesterday at the NFL Combine, and he talked about the collaboration aspect between he and Mike Vrabel, and that is a word that the Titans have been shoving down our throats ever since they hired Van Carthon. And it's something that I know is important to them, that everybody understands that it is not a pecking order, that it is everybody all in, all hands on deck, one, two, three, go team, go. But Van Carthon was asked about, hey, you know, tiebreakers, you know, what happens when you're in a difference in opinion. And Van Carthon says, you know, our foundation of football is the same, which I think is important. The foundation, you all need to be on the same page. Mm-hmm. And he says that we'll work through any tiebreaker, that it's not an ego-driven thing, that right now they're all on the same page. And this is something that we've been talking about ever since Van Carthon was hired, ever since the idea of collaboration has been introduced. But hearing Van Carthon double down on it, I know that it is so easy on February 28th to say that we'll work through any difference of opinion, that there's no ego involved in this, there's no need for a tiebreaker, that we are going to be walking hand in hand, lockstep together throughout this entire process, throughout the entirety of their careers with the Tennessee Titans. It's really easy to say that right now. But I look at this period that the Titans are going into and the difficult decisions that this team is going to make, the millions of different options that the Titans have of how they want to enter the draft, how they want to enter free agency, how they may be looking at the combine. They have a lot of really difficult decisions that are going to have to be made, like franchise-altering decisions, maybe potentially a new franchise quarterback. Mm-hmm. That's a huge decision that could get people fired. Van Carthon even said it in his introductory press conference. Quarterback is a position that gets you hired and fired. So there's going to be a lot of emotion, I think, that comes with these decisions that have to be made. Cutting guys, drafting guys, acquiring guys, paying guys, restructuring contracts, that there aren't always going to be very easy decisions that are going to be made or obvious decisions that they both can get to, you know, easily. You know, deciding to move on from Taylor Lewan, I don't think was that difficult of a decision to be made. And that doesn't mean that there weren't emotions involved, and it doesn't mean that Mike Vrabel loves Taylor Lewan any less. But looking at the business side of things, I don't think that was a very difficult decision. Mm-mm. They have a lot of difficult decisions to be made. So all of this, you know, hand-in-hand, go-team-go talk sounds really good right now. I just don't know how long it's going to last.
Yeah, I mean, they hope it lasts for the duration of this relationship, however long that lasts. But, you know, eventually, you know, there's going to come a point where a decision needs to be made and somebody has to make it, because I think even Van Carthon or Mike Vrabel, one of the two, alluded to it. Listen, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
And they'll get to it at some point.
Yeah, they'll get to it. But I think that's one of those things where, you know, you hope that you have everything established before you even get to that bridge. Because if you don't have it established and you get to that bridge, now there may be this divide. Mm-hmm. You know, is it my guy or is it your guy that we're going to go with? And ultimately, who makes that last decision on whether to keep a guy, release a guy, sign a guy, make a draft pick, whatever it is. So I do believe both Rand and Mike when they say it's a collaborative effort, because I think right now, in a position that this team is in, they have no choice but to be collaborative. They have no choice but to work together, because it's not like this roster is built to win a Super Bowl. You know, this roster is second place in AFC South right now. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, one of these said teams, either Houston or Indianapolis, get their quarterback. Because remember, Indy's not that far behind. If you look at their – they're really not that far behind. They're still trying to – they're still on this quarterback carousel, and they've been on it ever since Andrew Luck has retired. But they believe if they find their guy at quarterback, they have other pieces around. They have a good defense. Their offensive line is better than the Tennessee Titans' offensive line, even though they need some pieces too.
I don't know how much that says about the offensive line.
They have their running back. They have their running back of the future. They have a receiver. they don't have as many holes to plug as the Tennessee Titans. You look at Houston. Now, Houston might be the worst team. Well, I think, yeah, they are the worst team in that division.
Yeah.
So they have a lot of things they have to sort of do to get that roster back up. But in the meantime, the Titans are, based upon what happened last year, the Titans are the second best team in AFC South. So they don't want it to get to a point where it's become, oh, that bridge is right here. Now we got to make a decision. They hope that they can build this roster together, and in building it together, that they won't come to that point where, is it your guy or is it my guy?
Mm-hmm.
Which one are we going to pick, and who decides which guy it's going to be? They hope they don't get to that point. I think for a moment there, they were never at that point with John and Mike, because they were both were building a roster up. Now, there may have been a few things here and there, but I think for the most part, they both were going in the same direction.
And they each had their own roles carved
exactly.
out. That John was the general manager, mm-hmm. that he had final
and
say.
And John hired Mike.
Yes.
And it
like
seemed
Mike was
like,
John's guy.
It seemed like Mike hired Rand. Exactly. And that's the way it seemed. I'm not saying it's that way, but that is sort of the perception.
Well,
that,
Rand said yesterday,
yeah,
it's Mike's vision for offense, defense, and special teams. And my job is to get him the players mm-hmm. to execute his vision.
Yeah, you're right. So, I mean, but, okay, if that is indeed true, then what happens if this thing doesn't go the way that we all hope it will? Meaning that this team will be a, not just a playoff caliber team, but it will be a Super Bowl contending team. If that doesn't happen, then who does it fall on?
I would say Vrabel.
Yeah, I would tend to lean that way as well.
It's Mike's vision.
Yeah.
Mike's the coach. Mike was the one who survived the last round of firing mm-hmm. from Amy Adams Strunk, that she looked at John Robinson to be the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Mike stayed, and now Mike inevitably gains more responsibility. It would be hard to put that on Rand Carthon
mm-hmm.
when it's Mike's vision for the offense, defense, and special teams. And if they are truly working collaboratively,
mm-hmm.
then it would fall on Vrabel, I would think. But this was Vrabel yesterday when he was asked about the same question about who gets the tiebreaker.
If there's a difference of opinion on a player or a move, who breaks the tie?
Well, I think that relationship and has continued to grow and develop, and you know, excited about bridging his staff, him and Chad are new, and a lot of everybody else that's been here, our staff. From the coaching standpoint, have loved those communications about starting free agency and now with the draft and where we're headed and heading to putting our coaches on pro day. So, you know, that relationship is only getting stronger and building. And I think whether it's my vision or his vision, this our team and organization's vision, that's our goal, is to try to bring in, you know, players that. We always talk about it, that are winners, that love football, that have a level of speed and violence and versatility, and are willing to put the team first. So that's all we're trying to do.
So I wholeheartedly believe that they have a good relationship,
yeah.
that it's a budding relationship, that they have mutual respect for one another. I mean, Rand Carthon just seems like the most genuinely mm-hmm. nice guy.
Yeah.
I wholeheartedly believe that they have nothing but respect for one another. But Vrabel was asked, who's the tiebreaker? Well, you know, we have a great relationship. We all want to bring in guys here that execute our vision, which I believe, that they want to bring in the best mm-hmm. possible players to eventually win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, it's
but
he said his staff, my staff, and we're collaborator or whatnot, and then I guess the whole staff. When you look at it, what is the vision that we all have? It's not what's the vision that his staff has, or what's the vision that my staff, meaning the coaches, have. Mm-hmm.
It's scouts versus coaches.
Yeah, it's not, even though historically it is like scouts over here and coaches over here, and they sort of collaborate to try to build the best team.
Mm-hmm.
But what is the vision? It's not your vision, his vision. What is the vision? As long as the vision is in place and we're working toward that goal, then nothing else matters. Your vision doesn't matter. Your vision doesn't matter. The team's vision matter. The organization. What is the organization's vision moving forward? That's what we want to accomplish. Not yours, not mine, but the organization's.
Ours.
Ours, period. That's what it should be.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's what they want it to be.
And when asked about, you know, who gets the tiebreaker, and Mike Vrabel doesn't say anything, that to me is either he doesn't want to tell you who has final say, or because he would have just said, you know, hey, it's we won't need a tiebreaker. It's collaboration. And you could say all day long, you know, blow smoke and say, hey, it's going to be fine. It's going to be totally fine. Because I think that he is the tiebreaker. And for whatever that's worth, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know. That is yet to be determined. But it sounds like to me, hearing from what Rand Carthon said, hearing the lack of an answer from Mike Vrabel, it seems to me that he has the final say, that he is going to be the one running the ship. That is just my interpretation of it. But we'll get your thoughts on it coming up next. 615-737-1025, Caroline Millie DeMace. And hey, I want to tell you about the game that the Predators have tomorrow night. It is your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click, brought to you by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty and Superbook Sports. If you correctly guess a Preds player that scores a goal in the game tomorrow night, then you will win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. Participate in Pick to Click tomorrow morning at 8:45 a.m. with Robbie and Rex Road.
So I kind of hit on it a little bit earlier. So it's been, again, a similar system that J-Rob established, and it was important for me when I came in to make the adjustment to the group. As opposed to trying to flip the group and make them adjust to me. And again, with the language being the same, we're kind of in that same ballpark in terms of how we evaluate the player. So for me, in our meetings that we've had, whether it was free agency, whether it was the college meetings that we had before we got here, I'm more in a position I want to listen. I want to hear these guys speak. I'm getting to know these scouts and what their strengths and weaknesses are. So it's important for me to listen at this point. I've done my evaluations. I've done my work. So now I'm listening to them and how they see things.
There you go. That was Rand Carthon at the NFL Combine yesterday. D-Mace, unless you have a thought.
Let's go to the phones.
To the phones. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. If you have a thought, Jeff from Tennessee texts in and says, I interpreted Rand Carthon on Mike Vrabel's comments yesterday as another boring season of Tannehill if he's the quarterback.
Well, I mean, yes, I can see how you could hear that and come out and think the way you think, just as well as I can understand, you know, anybody else if they listened to what Rand said and maybe they had a thought contrary to what our texter thinks. But I don't think it'll be boring. I don't think that. I think it'll be interesting either way. Interesting in the sense of, man, this team has taken some steps back, more steps back, or interesting in the sense of, man, this team, they really, you know, got this team together and made them, you know, put together a roster good enough to genuinely compete and consistently compete in AFC South and ultimately win it. So I don't think it's going to be a boring season. I think it's going to be an interesting season either way.
Boring is so not fair.
Yeah.
Like, I totally understand people wanting to move on from Ryan Tannehill and wanting to go on to the quarterback of the future to be able to compete against the Burrows, the Mahomes, the Josh Allens, the Lamar Jacksons, the Justin Herberts. I totally get it. But since Ryan Tannehill has been the quarterback of the Tennessee Titans, you've gone to the AFC Championship game, you won the AFC South, and you lost the wild card round to the Ravens, you won the division last year, and you were the top seed in the AFC, and Ryan Tannehill just happened to throw three interceptions, and you lose to the Bengals in the divisional round of the playoffs. Like, that's not boring football.
Nah.
Making the playoffs every year and winning the division and going to the AFC Championship and being a hair away of competing for a Super Bowl twice, both in 19 and 21, like, that's not boring. What's boring is losing all the time. Mm-hmm. What's boring is just not even wanting to turn on the TV on a Sunday because you know you're going to lose. I'm sure it's pretty freaking boring to be a Houston Texans fan right now.
Oh, it has to be.
It's not fair to say that with Tannehill as the quarterback, it's boring. With Tannehill as your quarterback, I think you're guaranteed to have a minimum of 8 wins.
Mm-hmm.
That's not sexy. That's so, you know, Jeff Fisher-esque to go 9-8 and 8-9. Maybe you win the division and maybe you don't. But to have a quarterback that you know that you're not going to be bad enough to have the top pick in the draft next year, I think that's a pretty good position to be in.
I would say frustrating, not boring.
Frustrating
because,
is fair.
Exactly, because, you know, on one end, he might play, if he is the quarterback moving forward, he might play well, you know, for 2 weeks straight, 3 weeks straight, 4 weeks straight. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, maybe he has a game where he throws an interception or two, and then another game where he throws an interception. That's frustrating, and it's not boring. There's nothing that I think – the NFL is not boring, period. Regardless of what team, whether you're the Houston Texans or the Kansas City Chiefs, it's not going to be boring, mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah. And so I understand being frustrated, mm-hmm. that knowing that when Tannehill's your quarterback, you're probably not going to compete for a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. But it's not boring.
No.
Evan Texan says, I like Tannehill relative to any other option at quarterback for the Titans next year, including the headache that would be Aaron Rodgers. But I would pay them more than they're worth for a bridge-type deal, but have two or more draft picks to plug the many holes. Basically, pay more. I'm having a really tough time following. Pay money for more draft options that Carthon can get to work with while not absolutely dooming Vrabel to a sub-9 win team. Mm. So I think the point is maybe, you know, like, don't use your draft picks, mm-hmm. on a young quarterback in this year's draft. So you can use those draft picks on offensive line, wide receiver, defensive line, corner, whatever it might be. And if you do want to move on from Tannehill, just paying more to another quarterback just to have a bridge quarterback. I think Tannehill is your bridge quarterback,
yeah,
honestly.
He is. It's not like, you know, Tannehill has 5, 6, 7, 8 more years to play. He's a guy that, you know, I think he has a solid 3 years to play now. After that, it's up in the air. But I think he has a solid, barring any injury, he has a solid 3 years to be a starter in this league. So
you want him to be your starter for
exactly,
the next 3 years? Probably not.
Probably not. So that's why, just like you said, Caroline, he's already your bridge quarterback. People don't look at it as that because he's been here a while. Mm-hmm. But essentially, he would hold on to that mantle until you're able to acquire your franchise quarterback. So that does make you sort of this bridge quarterback in a sense, regardless of if you've been here, you know, 5 years like Ryan Tannehill or 1 or 2 years, you know, like typically bridge quarterbacks are. I think Ryan is your bridge quarterback right now.
And you can get Tannehill so much cheaper than you would any other quarterback, mm-hmm. that may be just as good, if not as good as Ryan, mm-hmm. Tannehill. I mean, Derek Carr is going to get $40+ million, probably in the ballpark of $45 million. Mm-hmm. You want to pay that much for Derek Carr? I don't.
Nah, even though I believe Derek Carr is a good quarterback, but it's not a significant upgrade from Ryan Tannehill, and I'm not paying him nearly that much money. I may have him some years. You know, I may have him 3 or 4 years longer, but essentially they're the same quarterback. So the problems you had with Ryan Tannehill, or the solutions you wanted to put in place while Ryan was your quarterback, are going to be the same solutions that you're going to have to put in place if Derek Carr is your quarterback. Upgrade your offensive line, get some more receivers, make the team great around this particular quarterback, whoever it is, whether it's Derek Carr or Ryan Tannehill.
Indy Ben texts into the text line. Teammates, do you know Indy Ben?
I've heard that name a lot.
He's a good friend of the Stillman & Company program, and it is always a treat to hear from our friend in Indianapolis. Indy Ben texts in, says, being boring is being stuck in mediocrity land. That's where the Titans have been the last few years. Outside of the 2019 playoff run, many outside of Tennessee haven't viewed them as a true contender. They were the top seed in the AFC last year.
They haven't been mediocre. They haven't been. This season was bad. It wasn't mediocre. But the season before that, they were good. The season before that, they were good. Mm-hmm. 2 seasons before, if you skip that season, then they made the AFC Championship game. So there hasn't been anything meteoric about the Tennessee Titans. They've been good, really good, or they've been like this season, mm-hmm. bad. No mediocre. Period. I can't see that in this team.
And to the point about nobody outside of Tennessee didn't view them as a true contender. One, I don't really know how true that is, mm-hmm. especially last year, the top seed in the AFC. But also, I think that's just kind of the nature of being in a small market. I think that's kind of the nature of this team. I don't know how many people on SportsCenter, on GetUp, on First Take are going to come out and say, wow, the Tennessee Titans look like the best team in the AFC. I think the Tennessee Titans are a true contender in the AFC. Mm-hmm. Because talking about Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs, and talking about Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals, and Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills is so much sexier than mm-hmm. it is to talk about Ryan Tannehill and the Tennessee Titans. But just because they're not talking about Ryan Tannehill and the Tennessee Titans, or they weren't last year probably, mm-hmm. is probably the best example I can use of that, doesn't mean that they weren't a true contender. Ryan Tannehill threw 3 interceptions against the Bengals, and the Titans still only lost by a field goal. Mm-hmm. I don't want to play revisionist history, and I don't want to say, well, if Ryan Tannehill didn't do this, because he did do it, but let's be realistic. Mm-hmm. If Ryan Tannehill didn't throw 3 interceptions in that divisional round against the Bengals, they would have gone on to play the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game.
Yeah, more than likely they were the team, you know, because I think people get it. Sometimes people get it mixed up. They think since people, you know, the pundits or talking heads aren't talking about this particular team, then they are not a team that is capable of winning or, you know, getting an AFC championship game or the NFC championship game, getting a Super Bowl, period. Mm-hmm. Just because, hell, how many times? I can say this with probably all confidence. What team has been talked about the most within the last, hell, decade, other than New England? What team?
Dallas.
The Dallas Cowboys. The Dallas freaking Cowboys have been talked. They probably were talked about more than New England.
Probably so.
And what happens with Dallas every year?
Every year they underachieve.
Exactly. They do exactly what Dallas do. Nothing.
Nothing.
So we can't. Yeah. So in Indy Ben, we can't sit here and say, well, since everybody's not talking about them, nobody's taking them seriously. Everybody talked about the damn Cowboys.
Yeah.
And they don't do nothing, you know? So the reason that people don't talk about the Titans as much, it has nothing to do with people believing or not believing that they are a true contender. They're just not a sexy team.
Yeah.
They're in a smaller market. They don't talk about the Cincinnati Bengals that much. And they got a franchise quarterback. They still talk
one
about
of the most popular quarterbacks exactly. in the league.
They still talk about the Buffalo Bills, the Kansas City.
The Packers.
The Packers. Hell, Dallas Cowboys.
Wherever Brady plays.
Exactly. They talk about that more than they talk about the Cincinnati Bengals. And the Cincinnati Bengals has them a franchise potential Hall of Fame quarterback underneath center. So let's not mistake, you know, people talking a lot about a team and how we view within the circles, within the football circles, how we view a particular team. I guarantee you, there are teams, a lot of teams, they would rather not play the Titans in the playoffs because they know how much of a battle that will be. Nobody talked about the Ravens in 2000, what was it? Yeah, 2000 when they won the Super Bowl. Why? Because they wasn't a sexy team. Mm-hmm. But you know what they did each and every week? Just beat team after team after team. And everybody was still doubting them. This team would never make it to this. They can't. They don't have a quarterback. They'd never make it. But what kept happening? And they kept winning. They kept winning. And they ultimately won the Super Bowl. So just because a lot of people aren't talking about you doesn't mean that you are not a potential threat or a strong threat to either get to the AFC Championship game or get to the Super Bowl.
And just because people are talking about you doesn't mean that exactly. you're a legitimate threat to
absolutely.
The Super Bowl.
Absolutely, i.e. Dallas Cowboys.
A la Mike McCarthy and the Dallas Cowboys. Caroline Willie DeMays coming up next. Tim Kelly said something, and I know it made so many of you mad, but do you have a right to be mad about it? Let's get into that coming up next. Caroline Willie DeMays, 1025-1063, The Game.